Fianna Fáil is to the fore as well, because of the fact that there was a 5-hour parliamentary party meeting by Fianna Fáil into the independent report into just how the party selected Jim Gavin to run as president and how it all went disastrously wrong. And really, it started to go wrong from the first social media video that was posted by the Jim Gavin campaign. Remember this?
It's a great honour for me to have been nominated to contest this election. For nearly 4 decades, I've dedicated my life to public service, and I've proudly worn the uniform of the Defence Forces, at home and overseas. I'm proud of my contribution to helping lead the largest UN mission of the 21st century. And I've held many other roles, showing my commitment to building our communities and serving our public. I'm standing because I believe in our country, and I believe in the incredibly positive role that the president can play. I want to be an active president, a president who works every day to bring us together at home and represent the best of Ireland abroad. And I'm going to travel to every part of the country, bringing a positive message of a president defined by leadership and service.
There you go. That was the video. That was a social media video of him walking on a farm, walking, wearing a pair of white pants, which is a no-no, and not closing the gate after him. And it went from bad to worse from that point. Here's a little bit after last night's meeting reaction from a number of different people, a number of different Fianna Fáil politicians. First up, you'll hear from Fianna Fáil TD for Cork South Central, Seamus McGrath, who says there won't be any confidence motion in the Taoiseach.
Absolutely not. We had a very good, open, frank discussion. There was at no point really was there any question around leadership of Micheál Martin in terms of the future of it. I think there is wide acceptance that he has been a successful leader of this party. We are only just 1 year into government. There's a big body of work to be done in terms of the key priorities of government, trying to implement the programme for government. So absolutely not.
Yes, I think it is. I think the public are probably sick of it at this point, and they definitely want us to focus on childcare. They want us to focus on housing infrastructure. Yeah, I think people want us to move on. And the mood in the meeting, look, there was strong opinions expressed by backbenchers and ministers. But I think the process was worthwhile.
Micheál Martin is walking on pretty thin ice now. I think the report, while it didn't have, as you said, any sort of smoking gun, it had nothing that they could really hang any blame on Micheál Martin for. I think the omission of what Micheál Martin knew about Jim Gavin's issue with the tenant is probably problematic.
There you go. That was just some of the people speaking in reaction to last night's 5-hour meeting. You heard from MEP Barry Andrews there, and finally Mary Regan, political editor of the Irish Independent, about where things stand now for Micheál Martin. Well, with me in our studio this morning to talk about this in more detail is Fianna Fáil councillor Mikey Sheehy. Councillor Sheehy, good morning to you and thanks for joining me in the programme. How are you feeling this morning, having looked at the report, having heard the words of your parliamentary party colleagues during that 5-hour, at times tense and angry meeting last night?
Yeah, good morning, Gerry. I suppose just to be really clear from the outset, obviously I wasn't at the parliamentary party meeting last night, so I'm not speaking with any first-hand knowledge of the report as presented. However, the issues around the process are not new to me. I suppose, just to be clear, I was out pretty early on this topic when the presidential selection process was being undertaken. At the time, with yourself and others, I raised concerns and queried how the process was being run. And those concerns weren't personal. They were more about structure, transparency, and about, I suppose, how we engage internally as a party and also how we engage with the wider public. And I think in hindsight, it's clear that those concerns were valid, and they were probably validated throughout that meeting last night. It's been a time of reflection. The report is a look back as to how the process was undertaken. I had concerns, like I said, in terms of the structure of the process. I had serious frustrations in and around the fact that myself as a party representative at a local level, at local government level, and also card-carrying members and grassroots members of Fianna Fáil weren't involved in the process. And I know that individuals at the time were steadfast in their support of the process, and there were remarks about how this was always the process, but because this was always the process didn't mean that the process was correct. And I think that has come out in the wash over the last number of weeks, and certainly came out in the wash last night at the parliamentary party meeting, from what I'm hearing and from what you're hearing.
Was there anything that surprised you or maybe shocked you that might shock party members this morning? The €400,000 spent on what was ultimately a failed campaign, which, you know, stopped 3 weeks before the vote. The fact that no internal polling was done whatsoever on Jim Gavin. The fact that Micheál Martin and Taoiseach only met Jim Gavin once before giving the thumbs up.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you've touched on a couple of the key points there. Obviously, the issue around the spend in a presidential election. Look, a presidential election, let's be clear, is an expensive race. That's not just for Fianna Fáil, that's for other parties and other entities. It's not a cheap race to get involved in. Let's be very clear about it. It's a national race. It's a national platform. It's a nationwide campaign. So, to be clear, if any party or any entity is going to be coming involved in a presidential election, they know from the outset it's going to be an expensive campaign. And we would have known that as a party anyway. Obviously, look, the way things have turned out and the fact that our candidate at the time withdrew from the race, obviously it looks like a black hole from that perspective. Again, alluding to the fact that there was no polling done prior to the candidate selection, that's another gaping hole, let's be honest about it. You would assume that, especially in a national level, even at a local level in a race for the Dáil, you'd assume some sort of polling would have been done prior to it. But I suppose this is all about the opportunities that this report also brings. It's not about assigning blame, but it's more to do with changing how we do things. It's about asking Fianna Fáil and maybe looking at ourselves about reconnecting with grassroots, reconnecting with local representatives, listening earlier, and maybe avoiding, you know, those closed and overly centralised decision-making processes that have been undertaken. And they have been very central, and they have been very, very closed, let's be honest about it. We need processes that bring members, bring public reps, bring the electorate with us, and not present them with a fait accompli. You know, if we don't learn from this, then the damage becomes long term. But I think that this report, and obviously the very frank discussions that took place last night in the parliamentary party, I think they offer an opportunity for us to move forward as a party and to start listening and to widen that net.
Would you welcome what was talked about yesterday as well, in terms of a suggestion that party members and county councillors need to be more involved and have a say and have a vote, perhaps, maybe, or at least be involved in the process of selecting candidates in future, presidential candidates, that is?
Of course, we had a discussion about this, Jerry, I think it was midway through August, on your programme, in and around the fact that it's very frustrating from a local representative perspective, but also as a card-carrying member of Fianna Fáil, individuals who would have been expected to go knocking on doors for any candidate, doors are being closed in their face in terms of the voting process and the selection process. And I think those voices are really, really important. They're important voices. The voices at grassroots level are the ones who have the fingers on the pulse. They're the ones who want to be heard, number one, and they need to be listened to. And if anything comes out of this process, and look, there has been a lot of calls over the last number of days from individuals now saying at senior levels that, look, we need to start listening. We need to start bringing grassroots levels with us. We need to start bringing local councils with us. I absolutely welcome that. I wanted my voice to be heard. I wanted an input into the process. I wanted to have a vote in the process. I wanted to have a candidate that I was backing in the presidential race. So absolutely, 100% I'd welcome that.
Okay, Mike, stay with me for 1 second. We're going to talk a bit more about this. We'll have more on this situation in Fianna Fáil. If you have a view on what you heard from that report and the parliamentary party meeting, get in touch. We'll have more on the way. We're talking with Fianna Fáil councillor Mikey Sheehy over the Jim Gavin presidential independent report. And Mikey, just a final question on this before we move on to one other thing. Look, what's your view on Micheál Martin's leadership now? And is your party increasingly divided now at the parliamentary party level because of this and other issues?
Okay, well, from the outset, I suppose it's not my role to get into any confidence debates, for example. I didn't have a vote in the presidential candidate process, so I'm far from getting a vote in any confidence debate. What I would say is that the outcome of the presidential election certainly has weakened Michal's leadership position. That's just a political reality. The focus now has to be on learning lessons and rebuilding. I suppose any leader will be weakened by an outcome like this. But it's also important to say that, you know, this wasn't just a centralised position. You know, it's also important to say that other senior party figures gave steadfast support to this process at the time. So this wasn't a solo act either. I suppose, look, what I'm saying overall, Gerry, here is I'm saying the process got it wrong. That responsibility sits collectively with those who designed it, supported it, defended it at the time. It wasn't one decision or just one person. It was a system failure. And this certainly, like I said, to the one of the first points I made here, this wasn't to do with any specific characters or individuals attached to the presidential election. My issue throughout this entire campaign was simply in and around the process, how it was designed, how it was undertaken, and literally the outcomes that it produced.
Okay, finally, Mike, just on a separate issue, there's been concern about the future of a post office for Ardfort. We understand that the current postmistress has agreed to remain in her position for some more weeks, but the community council took over the running of the post office on a temporary basis. The arrangement was due to come to an end 2 days ago. The show's been kept on the road, but what about the future?
Yeah, absolutely. So from the outset, huge concerns have been raised, not just in the short term, but in the long term, just in and around the position of the post office in Ardfort, a really vibrant community out there. And that really showed and came to the fore about a week and a half ago when a public meeting was arranged outside there. There was an excessive, I'd say, probably about 200 people involved in that public meeting that I sat in on. And I suppose, look, I got confirmation yesterday. It was actually late on Monday, just in terms of the application process and the fact that an application has now been lodged with Unpost in relation to the future operation of the post office service in Ardfort. And look, I just want to be clear from the outset on this. There is a process that Unpost undertake in terms of the assignment of postmasters and postmistresses. And while that process remains at an early stage, the submission of an application like this is really significant and is a positive step. And look, it follows on from sustained engagement, not only by myself, but by other public representatives and also by the community at large outside there. This is a hugely important service for an area like Ardfort. It doesn't just service Ardfort. It services the entire hinterland outside there. It's a very vibrant community outside there, and a service like this is absolutely key and core. And it's a really it's a big public service on offer outside there, and it's one that needs to be retained, and it's one that I'm hoping we can retain.
Okay, all right, we'll leave it there. That's Councillor Michael Sheehy, Fianna Fáil, in relation to those issues. If you view what he had to say, get in touch with us on the programme. With me on the line now to talk about the current situation within his own party is Kerry Deputy for Fianna Fáil, Michael Cahill. Deputy Cahill, good morning to you and thanks for joining me on the programme. It was a long night last night, a long meeting and at times a very testy meeting. How divided is your party this morning, I suppose, is my first question, or what do you see coming out of this report on the meeting last night?
First of all, Gerry, good morning, and good morning to your listeners. Yes, it was yet another marathon meeting. It started at 7 o'clock and finished around 20 to 12. Everyone and anyone that wanted to speak, you know, spoke at the meeting. I don't know, was there a whole pile new came out of it? Like, you know, I think everything that came out in the report was pretty much known, and there was some members quite angry and all of that, but I think it was a very constructive meeting, and I think it will do the party the world of good going forward. Obviously, I believe you know there'll be a set of guidelines put in place now for the future selection of a presidential candidate in the case that we were speaking about last night, where everyone from the grassroots up, you know, will have their say, including all members, obviously, councillors, TDs and senators. I don't believe you'll have a recommendation in advance of a vote, you know, going forward. And that should be the case, to be fair. I think the party will be a lot stronger as a result. I think we'll be able to knuckle down now to the real business of government. There are many, many issues. We've had some great parliamentary party meetings, to be fair, you know, but we're facing a lot of challenges, like, you know, with the muscular trade deal. I raised that at the recent agricultural meeting, the savage cuts to the fishing quotas. I raised that. I'm a member of the Fishing Maritime Committee myself. I actually called for, you know, for the government to take a case to the Court of Human Rights in regards to that, because I believe that our, you know, our fishermen and women and fishing communities, villages are being hung out to dry here.
Clearly lots of work to be done. But I know you say not much new out of it. Maybe that's because all of it might have been leaked over the weekend, so we only just found out several of the details in the report. However, were you not shocked yourself at the level and the sequence of pretty astonishing errors and general sloppiness around this campaign, which cost the party between 350 and 400,000 euro, and a candidate that pulls out in the middle of the race?
Yeah, it was, I suppose, using a word, it was a disaster, Jerry, from start to finish, to be honest about it. And lessons, you know, have to be learned. And yes, it, you know, that's the figure that's been mentioned, 350 to 400,000. And that would have to be paid, obviously. And look, in fairness to the Taoiseach, at the first marathon meeting, he put his hands up and he took responsibility. That is the truth. And there were obviously others involved. But it was sloppy. There's no point in saying otherwise. But that will all change now. You know, Fianna Fáil will learn from its mistakes. And, you know, we had a similar type of event before with Mary McAleese, when there was a big recommendation from the top table. Bertie Hearn was Taoiseach at the time. We all know about what happened to Albert Reynolds at that meeting, etc. So it's, you know, this has happened before, but it worked out the last time. It didn't work out on this occasion. If it had worked out, it would have been a different story completely. People would have called it a stroke of genius. But look, it's in the past now, I hope, and we just have to move on.
Is it in the past, though, Deputy Cahill? There's a significant amount of resentment within the party. Like, looking at Billy Kelleher and what was happening, and the way Jim Gavin was pushed by leadership, he's got every entitlement to feel very sore over what was done and how this candidate was pushed, now that we know what should have been known by people in leadership about questions about his candidacy. Yet he was pushed ahead of him and pressure was brought to bear on members. So there's lingering resentment here by several TDs and senators, I would say.
There is, and indeed the grassroots and councillors as well, Jerry, to be fair, like, you know, and, you know, we have to learn and learn fast from what went drastically wrong on this occasion. And like I said at the outset there, like, you know, we cannot have a case where the leadership will recommend a candidate prior to a vote. Now, to be fair, no pressure came on me, or I don't know of any individual TD or senator whose arm was twisted in regards to voting for Jim Gavin over Billy. Like, it was a, you know, it was a tight contest. Billy got a great vote, especially in the context of, you know, the leadership being in favour, and that was public knowledge. But like, there was no twisting of arms here, to be fair about it. And you know, I believe that our MEPs will be anxious to move on as well. You know, Billy and Cynthia were online, Barry Cowan was online, and Barry Andrews was present in at the meeting last night. But look, I think it's important now that we move on with the work of the programme for government. And there's many, many issues, as we all know, housing, planning for one-off houses. That's something I'm working very hard myself on. I'm pushing hard as well for constructed wetlands to sort out many of our villages in Kerry. We've over 40 unsold villages. I believe this is the way to address that. It's a much cheaper and faster way of getting houses built, and a much faster and cheaper reform of treatment.
Do you think you'll be able to get on with this work, or will there be a question over Micheál Martin's leadership into the new year that there are someone in the party that want to see him gone? Is he damaged by it?
Well, look, there's always camps. I mean, the first day I came up here, I realised that there was a camp there, you know, at that stage. But historically, there was always camps, and people will have their favourite candidates and all of that. Nobody has stepped forward in regards to the leadership. There's no position available at the moment, and until such time as there is, I don't think there's any point in debating the matter. At the end of the day, he did acknowledge and take responsibility at the very first parliamentary party meeting. And I hope that we, you know, I've an issue with the leaks as well. I didn't speak last night, Gerry, and neither did I speak at the first marathon meeting. Yeah. I was horrified when I heard that it was all in the public domain. And you know, in other words, you can't really speak your mind, and I'm not the only one that feels that way. We've, as I said as well, we've had excellent meetings. There's been excellent presentations by our senior ministers, and like I believe we are doing a good job in government. We have a lot of work to do and some very, very important issues, and we need to knuckle down and start focusing on the real issues that we were elected to address and help our people with.
Okay. All right, Deputy Mike Cloud, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time, but thanks very much for taking time to talk to us in the programme about that this morning. If you have a view on what Michael Cahill had to say about last night's meeting, the parliamentary party meeting, and the where it leaves the party leadership now and the party as a whole, then get in touch with us on the programme. The Minister for Children, Disability and Equality, Norma Foley, is this morning publishing two new action plans for early learning and childcare and school age childcare sectors. The Shaping the Future Early Years Action Plan commits to actions in 2026 to make services more affordable, accessible and improve quality. And the Simplify and Support Action Plan will promise to streamline administration and regulation, helping providers in the childcare sector and educators and practitioners and parents navigate the system more easily. I spoke to the minister about this and asked her what she's unveiling and how it's going to help both parents make things more affordable and providers make things easier.
Well, this is phase one of what will be a two-phase plan, really, delivering on the programme for government commitments. And it has three elements, which really, I suppose, that's to ensure affordability for parents, to ensure accessibility of places, and I suppose really the achievement of, you know, high quality education and obviously support for staff as well. So there's three elements, if you like, to this triangle to ensure that we have, you know, as I said, a provision of places, a sufficiency of provision of places for our children, to ensure that it's affordable for parents, and also to ensure then that, you know, providers are supported, and of course that the staff are supported.
And that's the key thing. The key thing here is the income limits are being changed.
Yes, indeed. In terms of affordability, one of the measures that I'm announcing today is that there will be new income limits, or new thresholds, if you like, to allow families to benefit from financial supports under the National Child Care Scheme. So as it stands, families benefit from different levels of subsidy under the National Child Care Scheme to access childcare support. So currently, families that earn under €26,000 benefit from the maximum National Child Care Scheme subsidies. I'm increasing that now to 34,000, so families that earn 34,000 will benefit from the maximum scheme. And then presently it's at 60,000 is the upper limit. I'm increasing that to 68,000, so between 34,000 and 68,000 families will receive, you know, graduated level of support under the National Child Care Scheme. And any families that earn more than 68,000 will all benefit from the universal supports that are available. So that's just a first step in that respect. We're also later, in 2026, we will also be introducing funding to to ensure that the maximum fee caps are also reduced. We began that process last year, and the details of that will be revealed in 2026. So it's to begin the process, if you like.
Yeah. Is that to get to this goal of €200 per child a month of costs for parents?
Yeah, that's correct, Gerry. And I've always been clear that will have to be achieved over the lifetime of government. So this is part of that, you know, the income levels, the thresholds that I've announced today, the maximum fee caps, which will again be announced in 2026, to begin the process towards achieving the €200 per week.
Okay. Now, you've also said that you're going to... You've also said that you're going to introduce new steps to streamline administration in the earlier sector to lessen the bureaucratic load for both providers and for parents, and particularly providers. I mean, this morning, writing online, one of those childcare providers, Regina Bushell, has talked about the challenges facing the sector. And one of the points she made was that a month ago, an update from the Department of Children, you know, went out to providers regards to records they're meant to keep. And in amongst those requirements was, as well as recording the arrival and departure of children at their childcare service, educators are now required to record their every movement between rooms, including when they're asked to jump between rooms on a short-term basis. And she cites this as an example of just some of the crazy bureaucratic burden that's being put upon childcare providers by departmental staff who seem to not have a clue of the reality of what it's like to run a creche, demanding those sort of records. Would you concede that that shouldn't have happened, perhaps, maybe, or that needs to be sorted out?
Again, look, I do want to say that one of the key issues that's raised with me by providers is the level of, administration that they face every single day, and that it is an enormous administrative burden. And now there was an independent report done here, and much work has gone into it. And so we are beginning again now to look at that administrative burden. So, for example, one of the I suppose issues that have been raised with me by providers is that they speak about, they use different apps or whatever to record a children's attendance. But once they've gathered that information must then be emailed or printed off and sent to Pubble. We now are putting a tender out so that there will be, a seamless transition, if you like, between once the information is gathered, it goes directly to Pubble. That's to cut down on that type of administration. Another issue that has been raised consistently with me by providers is the fact that when families apply to the National Childcare Scheme, they get what's called a CHIC. That's a childcare identifier code, basically, and it's called a CHIC. But every single year they have to apply for that CHIC. Some families apply on time for it, others for a variety of circumstances, maybe beyond their control, they apply for it later. So that causes problems in terms of drawing down funding for providers. We are now going to introduce one single permanent CHIC. So once a family becomes involved with the National Childcare Scheme, that's the CHIC that they will have. And there are, other elements as well. I know, for example, children with an additional need, they are supported by a scheme that's called the Access and Inclusion Model, the AIM model. But when a family applies, we'll say, for example, the two-year free preschool, the ECHE program, the family makes an application for an AIM support there. Then if they wish to benefit from the additional 3 hours that are given after the ECHE day, they make another application. And then if they want to apply for support outside of term time, which we've introduced, they make a third application. Going forward, there will only be one single application. So I am committed to looking at all of the aspects providers identify as, administrative burden. These are just some of the issues that I am announcing today that we are doing to streamline that. But we will continue to look at the issues going forward.
Okay. Can I ask you about core funding then, which is another major issue for providers? Core funding was frozen in 2021 in exchange for a direct payment by the state to childcare providers known as core funding. Initially, look, it worked well. It seemed like a good one for providers, but since then, it's been frozen. And they're arguing that the increases in core funding have not made up for the shortfall. Some of them hadn't raised their prices in a number of years previous to 2021. So some providers are facing a decade, effectively, of not putting up their prices. And they're arguing that the core funding increases in the state have not matched the cost of running their childcare providers. Some of them have closed as a result. Is that going to be addressed?
Again, just to say, fees were frozen in 2021, but to make up for fees being frozen, the state has provided core funding or core financial support to the providers to balance out.
And they're arguing it's not enough. The electricity, insurance, auto-enrollment, sick pay, the minimum wage, all of those things are eating away at their profits if they're making profit, and they're saying core funding isn't covering it.
And again, just in relation to that, I can say to you that year-on-year core funding has increased. Core funding for providers will increase again in 2026. Every single year the core funding has increased and has increased significantly. Like I can say to you, in 2020, there was over, I suppose, 600 million of an investment by the state. In 2026, that investment will be 1.5 billion in terms of core funding across so many different levels. It's a hugely significant investment by the state. And the state is committed to doing more and more in that space. But what I will say as well, you know, we have over 4,500 providers in core funding. That's 93% of all providers. The highest level we've ever had, we have this year in core funding. So providers are stepping forward in terms of joining the core funding model. And I can say I absolutely accept some providers do leave the system, but I can also say to you that of those who have left, more than 70% have actually rejoined core funding. And again, I am committed, you know, from budget to budget to ensuring that we have more and more money from a core funding point of view going directly to providers. But equally so, I want to say it's very important that we support the staff. And I can say that for the first time last year, €45 million was ring-fenced to go directly to staff to improve their wages. And I'm also confirming today that a further €45 million will be made available in 2026, again, directly to support the wages of staff. Again, that's the state stepping in. That's over €90 million over 2 years being provided by the state to go directly to the staff. In addition to what providers are doing themselves, the state stepping in to support the workers.
Okay, Minister, could I ask you on a separate issue? A long, five-hour, bruising parliamentary party meeting dealing in the independent report into how Jim Gavin was selected by party leadership to run for Fianna Fáil in the election, the recent presidential election. What's your assessment of what happened? The level of anger that was evident among quite a number of TDs and senators yesterday about how all this was so badly mishandled from start to finish.
Look, I really welcomed the review. I think it was important that the review was undertaken, and I express thanks really to the three members of parliamentary party and the senior council that were involved in formulating the review. It's very, very detailed about, you know, the timeline that was involved, how Mr. Gavin was approached in the first instance. And I do want to say, just in relation to that, I'm really, really conscious that there, you know, that Jim Gavin is at the centre of this, as is his wife and his children, and I'm very, very mindful of that, around that sensitivity, as it were. But again, you know, the Fianna Fáil party were approached on behalf of Jim Gavin by a former Dublin footballer. Then Jim Gavin himself followed up with a text to one of the senior cabinet ministers, and you know, it went from there. A meeting was held with the party HQ. And then the Taoiseach himself in late July met with the candidates. But at that stage, no decision had been taken. The candidate didn't confirm his availability or otherwise, and he confirmed that in August time. Now, between that time in August and when he was announced as a candidate, there was significant due diligence undertaken, in terms of there was a significant number of meetings with Jim Gavin himself, and all different permutations and issues that might arise were discussed with him. All public records were checked, research was done.
Clearly not enough, though, Minister, was done. Clearly not enough.
And I would have to say that specifically, Jim Gavin did sign the candidate agreement, where he actually signed and said that there were no issues, legal or otherwise, there were no disputes or otherwise, that he was involved in that might, you know, bring
impact
him
his
into
candidacy,
or indeed bring the party into
the... But on that, Minister, is that really acceptable for a party like Fianna Fáil, for the senior people involved here, including Micheál Martin, who know politics, who know what presidential elections are about? Is it really acceptable, given what's happened, given the amount of money spent by the party that will not be recouped, given how disastrously it went, that your own research wasn't done, that you just took the word of the candidate for it. And it wouldn't have been that difficult, given the identity of the person who was involved here, a member of the media in Dublin, given the context that had come from the media suggesting there was something up, that nothing really was done on the Fianna Fáil side. Like, your party members this morning would be wondering why, in God's name, a bit more work wasn't done to uncover. Like, it wasn't the Watergate situation we were talking about here. It was a tenant. That tenant was known to people. He worked in the media. Surely questions should have been asked outside of just asking the candidate. What do you say to that argument this morning?
But again, I would have to say to you that, and I think the report confirms this, and indeed the senior counsel himself last night when he spoke at the meeting confirmed this, that significant, in fact, a greater level of due diligence than had ever taken place before took place in advance of Jim Gavin being announced as the candidate. It was also made very clear by the senior counsel that when the issue was first raised, the issue was raised, I think, on the 5th and the 8th of September around an issue with a tenant. There was no detail given, there was no substance given, just that there was an issue with the tenant. The candidate was asked about that. The candidate said there was no such issue. And I suppose in the interest of balance here as well, there were a number of other claims that were being made in relation to Jim Gavin, which were quite scurrilous and quite, clearly unfounded allegations at that time as well. And this was added into the mix, and the candidate himself was absolutely adamant. And indeed, as I said, the detail that was given was just that it was a question around a tenant.
Yeah.
What I will say is that on the 4th of October, further detail where the tenant himself actually came forward, identified himself and gave specific detail. And it was at that point, when that was put to the candidate, that the candidate said there may well be an issue here and he would check his records. Now, I will say, and again the senior counsel said this, on every occasion prior to that, when it was put to the candidate, he said there was no issue here.
Yeah, there's people who will argue that Fianna Fáil should have done their own work aside from the candidate and done more to track it down, given the disaster that unfolded afterwards. What do you say on the other side of it then, to the shock that was expressed by some TDs and senators in the meeting last night, that Micheál Martin only met Jim Gavin once? And that wasn't enough work that was done, given how poorly he performed in debates, how poorly he performed in terms of performing to camera, the social media side of it, that not enough work or due diligence was done on that side either when deciding, is this person a candidate who's a chance of winning this election or not? One meeting and he gives the go-ahead.
Well, no, in actual fact, there was a meeting held on the 21st of July, if memory serves me right now, with Micheál Martin. And it was only sometime in August then that agreement was reached, that Jim Gavin would step forward and that he would go to the parliamentary party. And at the end of the day, the decision was made by the parliamentary party.
Under severe pressure from the leadership when others wanted to run.
Well, again, I want to say there were two excellent candidates that went before the parliamentary party, including Billy Kelleher, well known to us in Kerry, an excellent candidate, and there was very, very strong lobbying and canvassing done on Billy's behalf, and indeed there was very strong canvassing done on behalf of Jim Gavin. That's the nature of it. Mm. You know, any of us involved in politics know that there, you know, if you're going for an election, there's going to be lots of canvassing, there's going to be lots of one-to-one with the electorate. That's what it's all about. And that was clearly manifest on both sides. But look, what I will say, it was important to do the review. It was important that the detail is in the public domain, and it is absolutely in the public domain. Everybody is discussing it now.
Yeah.
The timeline, it was overseen by a senior counsel. But I really, really do think, and I don't take away from the fact, this has been a really, really difficult, challenging time for the Fianna Fáil party, the Fianna Fáil membership, and there has been a lot of hurt.
Yeah.
And I will say,
and a lot of anger
right from the beginning.
Ordinary members who go out selling the tickets, selling the annual draws, €400,000 down the drain, a poorly organised campaign, they're pretty angry this morning.
Absolutely, and I don't deny that at all. And I do want to say that from the beginning, you know, Micheál Martin has put his hand up and he said, I accept full responsibility for this. I do want to say that everybody talks about the process and the process not being in place and everything else. The process that was used for the selection of Jim Gavin was the process that was used in 1997 for the selection of Mary McAleese. And Mary McAleese went on and became an excellent president and, history tells the story there. I am very confident between 1997 and 2024, no one stepped forward. There was no proposal for a different type of process. There was no motion came to the Ardesh. And no doubt, if this had been a successful campaign for Fianna Fáil, there wouldn't have been any question around the process. But we know an awful lot more now. We have learned that there should be a better process, and it will be going before the Ardesh, and work will be done as regards what type of process we should have going forward.
Finally, because we're pushed for time, Minister. Lessons have been learned. Is Micheál Martin's leadership damaged as a result of this? You're clearly fully supporting him, but would you concede his leadership has been damaged by how this has been handled?
I think the Taoiseach himself has said that there are huge lessons to be learned here. There's a better process to be put in place going forward. But I do feel, and I sincerely feel this, the party membership and indeed the wider public really want government to get on with doing the work they have to do. I've discussed with you earlier, I'm in the middle of launching a childcare plan. Last week announced new legislation for the assessment of needs, have launched the new National Disability Plan. And there's so much other work going on right across government. Okay. I have a job to do. Government has a job to do.
And we need to get on now and
do that work.
Minister, we're caught for time, and thanks very much for giving us your views on that this morning.
Thanks very much, Gerry. Appreciate it.